Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And Jim, we start with the good. It's been a week of, for the most part, pretty good polling for Republicans and conservatives, and looking forward to the midterm elections, both from specific races as well as the way the president is viewed on a number of issues. Now we're looking at the way different groups of Americans look at the president, and it looks as though, according to this Washington Post story, that some of his most loyal supporters are not that loyal anymore. This is from the latest Washington Post ABC News poll. They basically point out that the president was largely elected and reelected by doing very, very well among women, young people, blacks, and Hispanics. Right now, women underwater for the president, 50% disapproved to 44% approving. Younger voters have him at only 43% approval. Hispanics at 57, but that's down from at 75 last year. He's still doing quite well with blacks at 87, which is down from 93%. So, Jim, we've talked about this before in the sense that these people aren't necessarily going to vote Republican, but if they're not enthused, they're not going to be out there working for him, and they're not going to be out there actually voting in some cases for Democrats.
One of the conceits we on the right have, and both sides have, we like to think that, boy, if people just knew what we knew, if they just paid attention, that people would agree with us. They would see things the way we see things. They'd be as upset with the president as we are. They would gravitate towards conservative positions. And that, we may be fooling ourselves with this a little bit, but it's indisputable that, one, that there are a whole lot of voters walking around who aren't, you know, who in a normal circumstance don't pay much attention to the news or politics or what's going on in Washington. A good chunk of Obama's base doesn't pay a lot of attention to the news on a day-to-day basis. And so now we have a summer of just so much bad news that you could be as tuned out as you like to be. You still probably heard something about the border kids and the unsecure border and the kids coming over there. You probably heard about Ebola. You probably heard about ISIS. And there was some poll which was kind of fascinating that said that 90-some percent of Americans said they had heard about the beheading of two American journalists. That got people's attention in a way very few things have. And I think, you see the sudden intense tumble of Obama's numbers. It's hard to believe it's not a factor in it. This sense that the world is not safer, the world is, as dangerous and jihadist. People didn't like the way Bush was fighting, the war on terror, and he was such a warmonger and all this stuff. And Obama came along, and Obama said, no, we're going to have tough, smart foreign policy, and I'll take care of this. And people are starting to realize, wait a minute, this is year six of Obama's presidency, and the world is not a better place. And there's every bit as much Islamist terror out there. People still hate us. The world doesn't respect us anymore. And so I think you're right, Greg, that none of these groups are necessarily going to be jumping into the Republican or conservative camp anytime soon. I think a first step in that process is dislodging those illusions they've held for a very long time. And I think just the evidence is mounting in front of them that the president's approach is just flat out not working.
And some broken promises along the way as we transition to martini number two. One of the first things the president did was order the closure of Guantanamo Bay, which is still open. But it also leads to an interesting problem that policy and others of this administration may be having on our ability to gather intelligence on our enemies. There was a special report with Brett Baer last night on the Fox News Channel with Catherine Herridge, one of the great reporters today. And she was talking about how different Obama administration policies potentially have led to a dearth of good intelligence. Number one, prosecuting terrorists, not using Guantanamo for that purpose much anymore. The lack of a status of forces agreement in Iraq. And then also the drone policy. Here's how that went. And this is Catherine Herridge, as well as some commentary by Cully Stimson of the Heritage Foundation.
The Obama administration has dramatically expanded the drone campaign, which began under President George W. Bush and is supported by leading Democrats. And while it's not possible to capture everyone, such as the head of Al-Qaeda's East African affiliate, who was successfully targeted and then killed earlier this month, critics say killing virtually every terrorist leader has made it harder to identify their close associates and followers.
And the preference for droning and just killing them, justice from 30,000 feet, has resulted in a treasure trove of information not being gained through lawful interrogation.
Jim, obviously drone strikes bring us a lot of advantages. You really don't put humans in a place of risk anymore in a lot of cases. But at the same time, dead men tell no tales.
Yeah, and it's, you know, periodically you'll hear things like statements of, we don't have particularly good sources on the ground, and we don't know who we can trust amongst the Syrian resistance. When you talk about how the U.S. seemed to have, okay, the president certainly seemed blindsided by the rise of ISIS and how rapidly they were able to overtake territory. There is some dispute as to whether the U.S. intelligence community and the military were quite as surprised as the president seemed to be. If you think about this, this is Iraq, in which the U.S. has had, you know, well, we still have this gigantic embassy, and we just kind of assumed that our intelligence community was continuing to gather information about that part of the world because that's what their job is. That's what they do. And so the idea that we are not as well informed about what's going on in these places as we ought to be is kind of unnerving. And I think it's very, you know, very fair to say, when's, you know, we captured that one guy from Benghazi back in June or so. You don't hear about the U.S. capturing these guys. And I don't think it's because we're doing this in secret, because we've gotten rid of extraordinary rendition and things like that. So the question is, how do you want to learn about the people who wish to do us harm? Signals intercepts were nice before Snowden, and then he shared the whole wide world all the different ways that we do our electronic eavesdropping and internet monitoring and things like that. So if they're not using the phones, you satellite surveillance with the National Reconnaissance Office, as we like to call them, the other NRO, they do their stuff really, really well, but you can only learn so much from looking down from about, a couple miles of, in the sky. How else do you learn about what's going on? There's a need for human intelligence gathering. That's something that has always made the policymakers a little uncomfortable because it involves risks, it involves putting people into dangerous places, it involves sometimes trading money and dealing with very unsavory characters so that they'll tell you what other unsavory characters are up to. For a while it seemed like we as a country were getting kind of mature about the fact that you had to do some of this stuff in order to stay safe, and now it seems like there's this, continued attempt to fight a very antiseptic war, and that's not the case. Maybe that's a really good segue to our third martini, isn't it, Greg?
Yes, when it comes to intel, torture is out, but torturing the English language is very much in with this administration. With Janet Napolitano, we got overseas contingency operations instead of war on terror. We got man-caused disasters instead of terrorism. Now, of course, with the president trying to rally the nation for the extermination of ISIS, getting rid of the cancer, destroying them, but we are not at war. And the State Department is on the front lines of this particular battle. Here's a reporter questioning Marie Harf at the State Department about what exactly we're doing.
Help me with this term, war on terrorism.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think I've ever used that term.
Saeed used it earlier, 13 years on. He said this war on terrorism. Is that something that's out of the lexicon now of the U.S. government's comments on what's happening?
Well, certainly not how I would refer to our efforts.
Not how she would refer to it. So let's talk to her boss, John Kerry, talking to CNN. Are we at war?
I think that's the wrong terminology. What we are doing is engaging in a very significant counterterrorism operation. And it's going to go on for some period of time. If somebody wants to think about it as being at war with ISIL, they can do so. But the fact is, it's a major counterterrorism operation that will have many different moving parts.
Jim, why? Why are they making such a huge effort not to call this a war?
There's two thoughts. The first is that, first of all, you kind of wish Kerry had the self-awareness to realize how stupid he sounds when he says, this is not war. This is a very significant major counterterrorism operation. Really? Okay, are we bombing stuff? Are our soldiers shooting at people? Are they shooting at us? Because if that's the case, that's bleeping war, okay? This cutesiness is just insufferable. But so the question is, why are they doing this? And a large portion of Obama's base, as we are quasi-pacifist, certainly skeptical of military action, doves, the anti-war left, all of those folks. And we had said earlier that they are not always the most well-informed news junkies who are keeping up on all this stuff. So as things get more chaotic and troubled around the world, there is a pretty serious effort, it seems, in this administration to persuade people that, no, things are going fine. As Obama said, the world was more dangerous 20 years ago. This is the JV team. the Obama wants you know, as many people as possible to be walking around, kind of sleepwalking, feeling like, eh, everything's going fine. We should be doing the feral happy dance. We should just be kind of walking down the street and feeling great about the state of the world, even though, you know, planes are being shot out of the sky and Russia's rolling into Ukraine and ISIS is on the march and they're beheading people and stuff like that. So if Obama said, I'm declaring war, well, first of all, then he's a war president, right? Then he suddenly becomes the opposite of everything he pledged to be. So the idea is to fight a war without letting the American people know that we're fighting a war, or at the very least to disturb the low information voters as little as possible, which strikes me as a very, you know, an extraordinarily cynical approach, and I think an approach that is not going to work, because I think whether, you know, no matter how much you try to fight a war without risk, there is risk, all right? At some point, there's a possibility that, you know, we had somebody shot down over Libya, you know, pilots get shot down. All those people we have training in Iraq, we cannot be certain that they're not going to encounter some sort of hostile fire. The moment flag-draped coffins come home, American people are going to say, well, why are we doing this? What's at stake here? And the president has to be willing to give a very solid, confident answer of why these sacrifices are worth it. And as for now, he and Kerry and the whole crew kind of want to tell America, well, we can do this and we won't have to make any sacrifices. And this is just going to blow up in their face if when we hope this never happens. But, you know, when you fight a war, there's always risk, and the possibility of U.S. military casualties is out there.
And if you want a good insight into the potential inner conflict the president is feeling right now, Jim's piece on that in the Morning Jolt today is outstanding. So make sure you check that out. Jim, we'll hold it there. Hopefully, as we always say on Friday, we'll have better news next week. Talk to you then.
Yeah, one of these weeks we'll get it.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.